Fruity Valley Hour, starring Zazu Pitts, Walter Hampton, Tom Howard, and George Shelton. This is Rudy Valley and Company. We have a large and distinguished company this hour, and many goings-on. The roster includes Graham,
Zazu Pitts,
one of the most famous of all comedians, a celebrated screen personality who is with us herself in a new comediata called Miss Pringle Gets a Ticket.
Walter Hampton,
a great actor, playing the most recent of his many distinguished roles, Svengali in Philby.
Tom Howard and George Shelton,
who have rejoiced us many a Thursday, and who return for another of their bouts of bad and arms, letting, as someone has remarked, the quips fall where they may.
And, ladies and gentlemen, a fight to a finish.
In one corner, Tom Howard, the entertainingly aggressive agrarian from Fairhaven, New Jersey. In the other corner, Tom's dearest pal and severest kibitzer, George Shelton. Put them together, stir well, bring to a boil, and we have two old friends who are the best of enemies. Tom Howard and George Shelton in one of my favorite verbal encounters.
Hey, hello, Graham. Thanks, Rudy. That's very nice. And George and I are more than glad to be up here with you tonight. How are you, George?
Oh, I'm fine, Tom.
Did you thank Rudy?
I certainly did.
Well, that was right. Yes, thank you.
Hey, wait a minute, Tom.
You know, after
Tom,
all, he could be someplace else tonight.
All right, just a minute.
Yeah.
What's the matter with your eye?
My eye? Oh, what eye?
Your left eye is all
swollen. Yeah, I bumped it, George.
You bumped it, huh?
You got a little bruise there.
Fooling with women again, huh?
What?
I say fooling with women again.
I wasn't fooling.
Oh,
say, George, you know.
Tom, I know.
I bumped it, George.
You bumped it? How's
that? I ate more. You see what happened?
No.
I got it from overeating.
Overeating?
Yeah, overeating.
What do you mean?
I ate more than I could pay for.
Yeah.
Thank George, I was going to sell
it. I know.
Did you notice that?
I did. I saw it. Good thing you borrowed that handkerchief.
Huh?
Good thing you borrowed that handkerchief.
Yeah, that kind of covered it up a little, George. Yeah, I was out on my lunch hour, you know.
Your lunch hour?
Yeah, my lunch hour.
What do you mean, lunch hour, and you're laying off?
Oh, lay it off. Working.
You working?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't lay... Oh, oh, no.
I didn't know that, Tom. You're working, huh?
Yes, that's fine. Yeah, I'm working down Third.
Third Avenue,
Third Avenue, yeah.
On the avenue, you're working?
A little off the corner there.
Well, where?
Yeah.
Out on the street, are you working?
No, in a store, and pressing establishment.
Oh,
cleaning and pressing a place.
What are you doing?
19 cents.
I say, what are you doing?
What?
I say, what are you doing?
I'm dying.
Wait a minute, Tom. Wait, you don't understand me.
Who?
I asked you where you were working.
Yeah, I got that much.
What'd you say?
I asked you, I got my bearings.
All right, you got your bearings. All right.
Yeah.
Where did you say you were working?
In a cleaning and pressing store.
All right, then I said, what were you doing?
I told you I was dying, didn't I?
But, Tom, you don't look sick.
I'm not sick. If I was sick, I couldn't die.
If you were sick, you couldn't die.
How do you feel when you're sick?
Wait a minute. All right. Supposing you were taken down with a serious illness that proved fatal.
What was that?
Illness.
Oh, yeah.
See, I haven't got a handkerchief to cover up.
What's the matter with your tonight, huh? If I was taken down with a serious illness, George, I'd probably be dead.
Well, when you die, aren't you dead?
How can you die? Listen, George, you can't die if you're dead. You're no good to a man.
All right, forget about it.
Don't be silly.
All right, what are you dying for?
I'm dying for a living.
Yeah.
What do you think? What am I dying for?
You mean to stand there and tell me that they pay you to die?
You don't think I'm going to die for nothing, do you, George? What do you mean? That's silly.
How much do you get?
Well, $18 a week.
For what?
For dying.
What do you want to die so cheap for?
Well, some weeks I make more, you know.
You make more?
Yeah, it's flexible.
How do you make more?
Some weeks I die overtime.
You die overtime?
Yeah, sure.
How do you die overtime?
Well, the boss comes around 5 o'clock. He looks at the clock. He tells time, and he says it's time to go home and have supper. Come back, you got to die at 11 o'clock tonight.
Who told you that?
The boy, the man I'm dying for.
The man you're dying for?
Yeah, I'm not dying for myself, you know.
Oh,
no.
I see.
I'm dying for another fella.
Another fella?
Yeah.
What's the matter with him? Can't he die?
Oh, sure. He don't have to die.
He don't have to die?
He's got four guys dying for him, you see? Yeah.
Four guys dying for him?
Yeah, he used to die.
Oh, he used to die?
Yeah, he died 3 years ago.
Oh, I see. Then you're not working for him now.
Yeah, same fella.
Oh, but
same
Tom,
fella.
If he died 3 years ago, how can you be working for him now?
Well, he quit dying.
Naturally.
He quit dying.
If he died 3 years ago, he had to quit.
Oh, no. If he died 3 years ago, that doesn't necessarily say he's forgotten how to die, George.
Oh, my. Listen here, Tom.
What?
Now, if you died this week, could you die again next week?
If I'm living? If I'm living? Sure, certainly. What
you're living?
Sure.
Why don't you take poison or something?
Take poison? You think I want to die?
Well, don't you? Don't you want to die?
Certainly not. If I die, I wouldn't be able to die. As long as I don't die, I can die all I want to.
If you could live to...
You're mixed up.
If I was you, I'd quit the job.
Quit? The job's a scarce. Besides, it belongs to a union.
Union?
Sure.
You understand then? Tell me that if I wanted to die, I would have to join a union?
No, if you want us to recognize you, if you want us to recognize you. Sure. That's up to you. You don't have to.
Listen, Tom. Listen, Tom. When I die, I don't care who recognizes me.
All right. If you want to die a scab, go ahead. We don't care.
Now, Tom, will you? You see, you're all excited.
Oh,
You fly off the handle too quick.
I'm not excited.
You're not level.
Very level.
No, now, calm yourself a little bit.
Calm, Tom, go ahead.
Now, say, you, this place where you're working, you have a boss, haven't you?
Oh, sure, I told you that.
All right, you got a boss.
Yeah, we got a boss.
You like your boss and everything?
Oh, that's bosses go.
All right. Now, take it easy. Now, what is the boss's name?
Who?
The man you're working for.
Yeah. What do you mean? I told you.
You did not tell me. You asked me his name.
Why should I ask you his name? I know his name.
Listen, who is the boss?
That's right.
What's right?
No, what is the shipping clerk?
Who is the shipping clerk?
No, who is the boss?
I don't know who he is.
Well, I'm telling you.
I don't even work down there.
I know you don't.
What do you keep asking me all
I'm
the time?
I'm not asking you.
Well, now, take it easy. Now, look. You come to work in the morning. Now, we say tomorrow morning you're going to work.
Well, I might be feeling well tomorrow.
Well, I know. But
I might go in tomorrow.
But can't you feel well just for tomorrow
well,
morning?
Well, I'll see you.
All right.
Get up in the morning. I don't know.
Now we're going to work. Now, yes. Do you follow me?
Why, you're not working there, are you?
I know I'm not working there. No.
Why should I follow you?
Well, I mean...
You don't know where the place is.
All right. Don't follow me then. Now you enter the office.
No, I go in the back way.
Well, go in the... Go in the office today, will you?
All right, but I'll get balled out.
All right, you get balled out. Now, you hang your hat up on the hat tree.
Yes.
On the hall tree.
Locker.
Yeah, in the locker. All right. Now, as you pass through, you call your boss something, don't you?
Yeah, but we don't let him hear it.
Oh, I don't know. I don't mean that. I mean, when you come in, don't you say good morning, Mr. So-and-so or
Why
something?
Why should I? Mr. So-and-so's the janitor.
Who's the janitor?
No, who's the boss?
I don't know who he is.
But I'm telling you who he is.
Listen here. Has the boss got a first name?
Certainly he's got a first name.
What is the boss's first name?
No, what is the shipping clerk's last name?
Tom, will you please tell me the boss's first name?
Izzy.
Izzy who?
That's right.
Good night.
Walter Hamden, one of the most distinguished of actors, has been a major event in the summer theaters. Mr. Hamden, so famous as Hamlet, Cyrano, and other heroic characters, has astonished and thrilled his audiences by the power and range of his impersonation. Last week, he played Svengali in Trilby at the Mohawk Drama Festival in Schenectady. Next week, Mr. Hamden moves to Ridgefield, Connecticut, and light comedy in A Successful Calamity. We are proud to present this great American actor in an episode from Trilby. Assisting Mr. Hamden are Miss Muriel Hutchison, who played Trilby with Mr. Hamden at the Mohawk Drama Festival, and George Meader of the Theatre Guild Company as Gecko. A garret studio in the Latin Quarter. It is a spacious room, but gloomy in the wavering candlelight. Svengali, a strange, mysterious, shabby musician from who knows where, is brooding in the shadows. Slowly he raises his head. His weird eyes are burning as he calls to the violinist, Gecko, his pupil.
Gecko! Gecko! Gecko!
Yes, master. I'm coming. Yes, master. Yes.
You are my friend, my Gecko?
Yes, master. Such as I am, second violin at the opera, such as I am, I owe it all to you. You taught me all I know. How should I forget it?
Have I money, my Gecko?
No, master. Not a sou.
Have I debt, my Gecko?
Our landlady does not permit us to forget it.
I have here the card of her lawyer. It is a warning for me to leave my poor little room. Well, now, I have to borrow 5 francs from those pig dog artists. I'm going to make millions.
Millions?
Well, you shall have a part of them. A small part, but enough.
But how, master? How?
Mitzi Trilby.
Trilby? But she is an artist, model.
I'm telling you a great secret, Manteco. That composer Littolf discovered it, too. That sweet Littolf. He has the cunning ear. Well, Littolf said to me that the most beautiful voice in Europe belonged to Trilby.
But, master, she is tone deaf. She cannot distinguish one note from another.
Bah, I have looked into her mouth. The roof is like the dome of the Pantheon. The entrance to her throat is like the middle porch of Saint-Sulpice. And her big British teeth are like knuckle bones. And the bridge of her nose is at the belly of a Stradivarius. Of what a sounding board. Oh, my Gecko, she will bring so much money that we will weary of counting it.
But she has never learned to sing.
We will teach her. We will teach her together. Morning, noon, and night, 6-8 hours a day. We will take her voice, note by note, until it rains. Velvet and gold. Beautiful flowers, pearls, diamonds, rubies.
Then you can work magic.
Yeah, I can work magic. At least what fools call it magic. I can make Trilby do my bidding.
Bah.
Yesterday you saw me cure the pain in her eyes.
A trick of magnetism.
What's the beginning? Trained by me, she shall sing for the whole vault's delight.
Master, she can no more sing than my fiddle can play of itself.
Hers will be the voice. Mine, the feeling. Mine, the knowledge. I have not studied Mesmer's art in vain. Trilby shall be the greatest soprano the vault has ever known. What emperors and grand dukes shall kiss her hand.
But, master, Trilby loves the Englishman, Billy. They're very happy. They'll be married, master. They leave Paris for England tonight.
There will be no wedding, my Gecko. I have a way to stop it.
You will not hurt Trilby. We all love her so, master. I think I want no share in this.
You are an error, my Gecko. You'll all go away together. You and Trilby and I. We will wander eastward. Leave these big dog artists to daub their canvases, addle their little brains, and break their little hearts. And when we come back, he will bring with us a songbird, oh, the like of which has never been heard before, and the like of which will never be heard again.
Bengali!
My little one. Yeah?
I'm looking for Billy.
Indeed, my belle chérie. Billy is not here. Gecko tells me that you and Billy are to be married tonight.
Yes, Bengali, I'm so very happy.
So, at midnight, we say goodbye, my Trilby.
I shall be glad to leave Paris, Bengali.
You will leave it gaily. Carriages shouting, Zuzu blowing the horn, and the organist at San Nicolas playing beautiful music. But see, my Trilby.
Please, Bengali. Don't stare at me like that.
Trilby, the day will come when you will stare at me.
I wish you'd let me alone.
Look at me. Look me in the whites of the eye.
I wish you would let me alone. I wish you would...
There's a light glimmering yonder. The light of ugly little building. And inside are 8 slabs of marble all in a row. It is the them all.
Look.
But don't be careful, my Trilby. Did you who leave Paris so gaily do not come back to sleep on one of those marble slabs. So did the people stare through the plate glass window and say, ah, what a beautiful woman must Trilby. She should be riding in her carriage and pair. But she would not listen to Svengali, and so she lost him. And is now lying there. While all day and all night, the cold water from the tap over her head shall trickle, trickle, trickle down her beautiful white body to her beautiful white feet. Drip. 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 Sleep. Ma mignonne. Sleep. Creepy. Can you hear me? Creepy, can you hear me?
Yes.
You will do as I bid you?
Yes.
Zit.
She is asleep.
Wake her up.
Trilby. Trilby. Wake up. It's Gecko. Master, I cannot.
Take this pen, Trilby. All right. My dear Billy.
My dear Billy.
This is to say goodbye.
To say goodbye.
Your mother is right. I must never see you again.
Never see you again.
I have left Paris forever.
Paris forever.
Do not try to find me.
Try to find me.
I am safe with friends.
Friends.
Trilby O'Farrell.
Trilby O'Farrell.
It's mine, Gecko.
Philby,
it's mine.
Svengali, you schemer of the devil.
She's going to become the greatest of singers. She'll sing as a nightingale. And the beautiful princess will invite Svengali to their palaces and pay him 1,000 francs to play for them. But he will not look at them. He will look inward at his own dream. And his dream shall be about Philby to lay his talent. 1,000 francs at her beautiful white feet. And you, my Trilby, you shall hear nothing, see nothing, think of nothing, but Svengali, 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 remember these things, my Trilby. Remember them. I will have millions, millions.
Invite you to enjoy a special treat. Ice cream made from royal pudding. Is your favorite chocolate, or is it vanilla, or butterscotch? You can have them all. For royal puddings come in all three flavors, and each flavor makes grand ice cream. And don't forget that royal puddings, served the regular way, are wonderfully cooling and delicious. Just try them. Well chilled for a perfect summer treat. Ask your grocer tomorrow for royal pudding. Be sure to get real royal. R-O-Y-A-L. The Rudy Valley Hour will continue in just a moment.
Ahead of us in the next half hour or so are Miss Zazu Pitts in Miss Pringle Gets a Ticket, the music of the Connecticut Yankees, and something else enlisting the services of Walter Hamden, Tom Howard, and Miss Pitts. That'll be along near the finale. This, however, is the beginning of...
Rudy Valley Hour, Act Two, presented by Fleischmann's Yeast, the tonic food that helps so many people over 40 ward off a slump in energy at middle age, that helps them feel more vigorous and energetic, young for their age. Rudy Valley and his Connecticut Yankees. That announcement on the marquee of a hotel, a nightclub, a ballroom, means there will not only be lots of dance music, but lots of dancers. For our versatile Valley is one of the most popular of all directors of foxtrots, waltzes, rumbas, and, well, if it's the shag or the big laugh apple that's wanted, Rudy is there with the music for such goings-on, too. Every year, Rudy meets up with hundreds of gatherings that have come to dance to his music. And as a dance band maestro, he has problems that might not be obvious to the casual observer. What Rudy is up against when he stands in front of the Connecticut Yankees and faces a crowd of people dancing, and what he does about it, appears in a reasonably realistic dance medley called Rudy on the Roof.
Spring is here, why doesn't the breeze delight me? Stars appear, why doesn't the night invite me? Maybe it's because nobody loves me. Spring is here, right here.
We have just started a set of melodic and moderately tempoed songs when a mildly belligerent voice demands that we depart from the sweet tune we are playing to substitute a hot arrangement, a medley from the opera Martha. Larry Clinton's arrangement is excellent, and we are happy to oblige.
Martha, Martha, I implore thee, leave me not, deep and dark despair. Never leave me, nor deceive me, come and share thy boon with me.
Swing is, so to speak, in full swing when suddenly one of the pages who carries messages and phone calls whispers that the big birthday party on the terrace has arrived at the birthday cake stage. The bringing on of the birthday cake is an imperative signal for a birthday medley, which we immediately play.
For it's somebody's birthday, the first time on Earth Day, a time to be happy and gay. This delightful occasion is in celebration of years as they pass away. So with music and flowers we'll spend the happy hours. We'll sing and we'll dance and we'll play. Let's all drink a toast to our most charming host. For it's somebody's birthday today.
Good. As we have started something by playing these birthday songs, there are other birthdays being celebrated on the roof, and they not only want the additional playing of Happy Birthday for them, but also the mention of the honor guest's name on the loudspeaker. The average person seems to have a harmless and somewhat naive vanity about hearing his name mentioned publicly. But to mention one would lead to a deluge of requests to mention all. So my most diplomatic move is to continue with dance numbers. Then a young lady who describes herself as an old-fashioned girl asks for an old-fashioned waltz. We're one of the few bands that likes to play waltzes, so she dances to the Moon of Manicura. Not very old-fashioned, but at least the fiddles and the pianists know it, and it saves scurrying through our music books looking for something that might be called old-fashioned. Find among our dancers many West Point cadets. They are easily distinguished by their straight way of holding themselves while dancing and the close West Point haircut. While they might be proudly wearing their uniforms as second lieutenant that they have striven for 4 years to be able to wear, they are always somehow in civilian clothes. To make them feel welcome, we play a medley of Army songs. That there is another important group of young men with us, Navy men. They let us know that they would like some of their songs in no uncertain manner. And there is the inevitable fellow who wants to play the drums with the orchestra, the fellow who wants us to play a song that he wrote in high school, and the young lady who wishes we wouldn't play anything but Kiss Me Again. Well, those are some of the things that the fellow who leads the band has to think about. We'll do our best for all of them, and maybe on some Thursday evening in the future, we'll tell you musically about those situations. Has brought to New York one of the most welcome of visitors, Miss Zazu Pitts, the delightful comedian whose popularity is so great that people are having contests for the best imitation of Miss Pitts.
Oh, dear.
But we have the pleasure of presenting the original and, I believe, practically inimitable Zazu Pitts, who began a series of personal appearances at the Paramount Theater today. For Zazu Pitts' personal appearance here this evening, we invited Keith Fowler to write a comedy. The result is called Miss Pringle Gets a Ticket. Presenting Miss Zazu Pitts with the assistance of Harold Vermilia and Walter Scanlon in Miss Pringle Gets a Ticket. Martha Pringle, school teacher, celebrates her vacation by purchasing an automobile. On her first day at the wheel, she runs afoul of the law and is told by an officer to appear in court the following morning. As the scene opens, the judge calls her name and...
Next case, Miss Martha Pringle. Miss Martha Pringle.
Were you calling me, Judge?
I was. If your name is Miss Martha Pringle.
Yes, that's my name. I suppose it always will be my name.
Will you come forward, please?
Oh, that's awfully sweet of you. But you mustn't bother. I can see everything from where I'm sitting.
Are you under the impression, Miss Pringle, that you're in this court merely as a spectator?
Why, I really don't know. Does my ticket entitle me to anything else? Do I get a set of dishes if it's the lucky number?
Are you referring to the ticket given you yesterday by Officer Downey?
Yes, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. You see, I get around for little since our little theater group disbanded.
You are here to answer a charge of reckless and improper driving. Please step forward.
There must be some mistake, Judge. I've never done anything improper. I'm sure I'd remember it if I had.
I'm afraid there's been no mistake. You can settle the whole thing, Miss Pringle, by answering one question. Are you guilty?
Well, none of us is perfect.
Are you guilty of the charges preferred against you by Traffic Officer Downey?
The charges? Officer Downey just gave me a ticket and told me to come here this morning. And I said I'd be delighted. And here I am now, and it's all very confusing to me. Aren't you confused?
Suppose we approach this problem by easy steps. First, you are Miss Martha Pringle.
Well, that's fine. You have a wonderful memory for names. I have a memory for faces, but no memory at all for names.
Yes, well, never mind. Second, you are the owner of...
What is your name, Judge?
I am Judge Henry Veazey.
Veazey. Oh. Do you have a son named Claude Veazey?
Yes, I have, but that has no bearing on this case.
Dear little Claude. He's one of my pupils. A sweet boy, but so dull at arithmetic.
My son, Miss Pringle, has an excellent mind.
Oh, dear. Now I've hurt your feelings. But really, when it comes to arithmetic, Claude is stupid. In a well-bred way.
Perhaps we can continue that discussion at some other time. At present, your case must be settled. Will Officer Downey please step forward?
Here I am, Your Honor.
Why, Officer Downey, how nice to see you again. Remember me?
I sure do, lady.
Oh, you old flatter.
No, Miss Pringle. Let's get down to business. Officer Downey will present the evidence, and if you wish, you may defend yourself.
Against him?
Exactly.
Well, I'll try. Of course, it's been quite a while since I defended myself against a man.
She thinks we're going to wrestle, Judge.
Quiet, Downey. You, Miss Pringle, will present your side of the case. Officer Downey will present his. I will hear both sides and render a fair and impartial decision.
Are you always impartial, Judge?
I pride myself on that fact.
Even when you say your son Claude isn't dull at arithmetic?
My son Claude is not on trial.
Of course, it may be like father, like son. Are you dull at arithmetic?
My dear woman...
Now, if one man can mow a field in 3 days and another man can mow it in 2, how long would it take both together to mow it?
I refuse... Well, let me see. One man, 3 days. That's quite simple. The answer is 2.5 days.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Oh, sure it ain't. You add them up and get 5 days. That's right, 5 days.
Your children must be dull at arithmetic, too, Officer Downey.
I ain't got any kids. I ain't married.
And neither am I.
So what?
Oh, dear, now he thinks I'm a scheming woman.
Must this issue be forever sidetracked? Get on with it, Officer Downey. What was Miss Pringle doing when you gave her the ticket?
She was parked on the wrong side of the street.
But I wasn't. I'd gone downtown to buy a piece of dotted Swiss for a shirtwaist. And I stopped in front of the Bonton shop. If I'd stopped on the other side of the street and the Bonton shop would have been there. So I must have been on the right side of the street.
She told me the same thing, Judge. I ain't figured it out yet.
The location of the Bonton shop, Miss Pringle, has nothing to do with traffic regulations. What if all drivers always stayed on the same side of the street? Can't you see what would happen?
I suppose it would get awfully monotonous.
I can only point out that you endangered the lives of other people simply because you wanted to buy a piece of, well, whatever it was you wanted to buy.
A dotted Swiss.
Yes, dotted Swiss. I assure you, madam, that I would never place dotted Swiss above the public welfare.
But dotted Swiss wouldn't be right for you, Judge. You're more the blue shirt type.
Your guilt is obvious, Miss Pringle, but since this is your first offense, I am inclined to be lenient. And so,
hey,
Miss Pringle...
Hey, that ain't all, Your Honor.
What? There's more?
Plenty. You got no idea what this lady can do once she gets started.
Why, Officer Downey, you make me sound quite fascinating.
Proceed, Downey. What else have you to report?
Well, Half an hour after I give her the first ticket, I run into her again and give her another ticket. 15 minutes later, I run into her again and give her another ticket. An hour later, I...
Wait a minute. Miss Pringle, how many tickets in all did Officer Downey give you?
A 6, but you mustn't blame me. I told him he shouldn't be so generous, but he kept insisting. I couldn't do a thing with him.
Where are the other tickets?
I tucked them away in my hope chest.
Downey, maybe you can straighten this out. The first ticket was for parking on the wrong side of the street. How about the second one?
Well, 3 times she held out her hand and didn't make no turn. Then she made a quick turn and didn't hold out her hand.
Is that true, Miss Pringle?
Oh, yes. It was getting cloudy, and I put out my hand to see if it was raining.
Well, why didn't you put out your hand when you did turn?
Well, it wasn't raining.
My dear Miss Pringle, don't you realize that you might have caused an accident, that someone might have collided with you?
Yeah, maybe you think somebody didn't.
Oh, there was an accident.
Not exactly. A man in his car just happened to be where I went.
Was he hurt?
I don't think so. After a while, he got out and picked up his fender and said, "Oh, you women."
And you, Miss Pringle?
I just said, "Oh, you men." I hope it didn't sound flirtatious.
Proceed, Downey. What was the third instance?
I just started to hope I'd seen the last of this lady when, bing, there she was again. She was going through a bunch of red lights like they weren't even there.
Well, Miss Pringle, didn't you see those red lights?
Oh, yes, I saw them. They're a very pretty shade of red. Did you pick them out?
It might interest you to know that when you see a red light, it means stop.
In what language?
In any language.
Oh, that reminds me. Your son Claude is not only dull at arithmetic, but he's the weeniest bit backward at language.
Must we drag my son into this again?
Say, I just got it.
Yes, Donnie?
It would take both of them guys 6 days to mow that field.
Quiet. I refuse to have this court turned into a kindergarten. In the future, Miss Pringle, please abide by this slogan. When lights are green, the coast is clean. When lights are red, always stop dead.
Why, what a lovely little jingle.
Now then, when...
No, don't prompt me. When lights are green, the coast is clean.
Go on, go on. When lights are red...
Go straight ahead. There. I'm sure I'll never forget it.
Oh, what's the use? Proceed, Officer Downey. What happened next?
Well, I caught her speeding, Your Honor. 60 miles an hour.
60 miles an hour? Oh, dear me. You're all mixed up. I've only gone 37 miles since I bought my car.
He didn't say you went 60 miles. He said you were going 60 miles an hour.
But that's all wrong, too. When he stopped me, it was exactly 2:45, and I left my house at 10 after 2. And that certainly doesn't make an hour, Judge.
Hour or no hour, were you going fast?
Well, at one time, I was traveling in a pretty smart clip.
Why, Miss Pringle?
I think I must have stepped on the jigger when I meant to step on the doohickey.
You stepped on the doohickey when you... Miss Pringle, may I see your license?
A license?
Yes. When you get a car, you're also supposed to get a license.
Oh, is that so?
Miss Pringle, you've broken every law in the book and you have no license. I offer you a choice of 30 days or $50. I presume you'll take the $50.
No, I couldn't, Judge. I simply couldn't.
What?
Oh, please don't think I'm ungrateful. After all, I did take your free tickets, but I couldn't possibly accept a sum of money from a comparative stranger.
Except... Listen, Miss Pringle.
Suppose my friends asked me what I did to earn those $50. What could I say? No, Judge, I've never been a gold digger, and I'm afraid it's too late to learn now.
I give up. I know when I'm licked. Court dismissed. I'm not going home.
Oh, Judge, must you go, Judge?
I must.
Well, I'll be glad to drive you home. I have my automobile outside. It's parked right next to the fire hydrant.
Thank our good friends Lee Sims and Ida Mae Bailey for this lovely tune, It Isn't That, and Fred Fisher for Carol Gould's little tune, Tarzan.
Thoughts that come to me shouldn't be a mystery, but it's true. felt this way till that certain day, so it must be you. What is this grand new thrill? What makes my heart stand still? I've tried to analyze and to realize why I feel this way. It isn't that you smile just like that angel, or that your eyes are blue as skies above. I know that I'm susceptible to beauty and to charm. It isn't that, my dear, it's love. It isn't that I'm proud to say you're mine, dear. For pride, they say, must go before a fall. For I've already tumbled, oh, so humbly at your feet. Tell me, what can it be? Sweetheart, maybe it's the moon above. No, it isn't that, my dear. It's
swinging in the trees, you get ants and bumblebees buzzing, buzzing all around your knees. I got wise, all your lies and hunky tunkeries. This is favor you have made, a monkey out of me. Tarzan, Tarzan. Big gorilla, lady killer, coconut to you.
Forecast, a peculiar interlude enlisting the talents of Walter Hamden, Tom Howard, George Shelton, and Miss Zazu Pitts. Mr. Hamden is the prologue to this story. Mr. Walter Hamden.
Ladies and gentlemen, a little while ago I had the pleasure of playing Svengali, but now I am the prologue for another Svengali, who makes his first appearance in this role this evening. I shall not say his last appearance. Let it pass that this is his first. Yet I cannot help thinking, This new Svengali appears in an episode by John Whedon entitled Swengali. If my suspicion is correct, this is a faintly Barrow House version of Trilby. And the cast, to name it, is to say everything. Let the curtain rise, then, on Svengali, with the following players. Svengali, played by Tom Howard. Gekko, played by George Shelton. And, for her world premiere in this role, Miss Zazu Pitts as Trilby. Hold everything, and may the best man win.
Hello, Gecko.
Yes, Master. Yes, Master.
You are my friend, Gecko.
I certainly am.
Yes.
And I'm also second clarinetist with the Connecticut Yankees.
Have I money, Gecko?
Boss, you know you haven't got any money, no.
Well, I was just asking. Have I debt, my little buckaroo?
Have you got debt? And how?
Debt too bad.
Oh.
Did you see how I slipped that one in there?
I certainly did, yeah. I could take my clarinet, boss, and go out and play on the corner and see what I could get.
You'd get plenty, but we couldn't eat it. Where's that Trilby?
I don't know where she is, boss.
Swingowie!
Here she comes now. Ain't that a coincidence, though?
Yoo-hoo! Swingowie!
Sounds like something loose in her larynx.
Gecko, my faithful, low, unpaid servant. Can you keep a secret?
I certainly can.
I personally have discovered that the most amazing voice in all the world is none other than Trilby's.
Yes, but not for singing, though.
We will be rich, Gecko. We will make millions.
But, boss,
thousands.
But, boss, she can't sing.
Will you let me get my lines out here before I touch them like that? What do you mean she can't sing? I've looked into her mouth. It's like the cave of the winds. Her throat is like the left wing of the Holland Tunnel.
Swingowie.
And her teeth are like the stars.
They come out at night, I suppose.
They come out at night.
Swingowie. Oh, pardon me. You'll have to excuse me if I seem a little distraught. I've just been through a terrible experience.
What, somebody getting fresh?
A sculptor. He lured me to his studio under false pretenses.
The chiseler? Name him, I'll cut his heart out.
His name? Oh, dear, I forget, but I shouldn't have trusted him. Do you know what he wanted?
Well, I might hazard a guess.
He wanted me to pose for a radiator cap.
I'll garrote him.
One of those expensive radiator caps. You know, with everything going whoosh.
Evidently a bounder.
My goodness, I was never so... Well, he was kind of good looking, though.
I see. Gecko tells me you and Billy are to be married tonight.
Who, me? Oh, yes. I guess it's Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Trilby, what do you want to mess around with that Billy for? Come on, tell me before I hypnotize the living daylights out of you. What's Billy got that I ain't got?
Well, he's... I don't know. He's just my Bill. An ordinary man, but...
Quiet, quiet.
And an ordinary voice.
Yes, but she will sing. She'll sing the way I tell her and the songs I tell her.
Oh, I couldn't.
Come over here. Come over here by Papa Trilby. There now, don't be afraid. I'll get you a 10-year contract with the Metropolitan.
What?
Well, a week at the Paramount. Come, my little cabbage, sit here beside me. Now, take a quick look at this song. We'll give it the once over lightly.
No, I don't like it.
You all do my will?
No.
What?
You better give it the eye, boss.
Look into my eyes, Trilby.
Joe Swingowie, don't you look at me like that.
Look into my eyes, Trilby. What do you see there? It's me. Look. Look deeply, Trilby.
You look in my eyes first.
Now, wait a minute. Don't start that, Trilby. If there's any hypnotizing to be done around here, I'm going to do it. Now, Trilby, cut it out. Do you hear? Cut it out. It's a struggle here. She's trying to hypnotize me.
You're using the wrong eye, boy.
I'm the wrong eye. Look into my eyes, Trilby. Not the glass one. Look into my eyes. I'll fool her. I'll cross them. Ha! I caught her off her guard. It's in the bag. She sleeps. She slips. She slips.
Ah, you got her, boss. Nice going. You sure got the eyeball working that time.
Keep out of this, Gecko. I'll handle her. Now sleep, Trilby. Sleep. What a voice.
My gosh, you done it.
Trilby. Trilby, do you hear me? Hello, hello, hello? 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you hear me, Trilby?
I heard you the first time.
You are in my power. Do you hear?
Oh, dear. Okay.
You will now sing the songs I wish. And you will sing them as they should be sung. She is mine, Gecko. Philby is mine. And we're going to be rich. Swing it, sister. Let's put Floozy with a fly, fly. Hit it, Gecko.
Let's put Floozy with a fly, fly.
Let's put Floozy with a fly, fly.
Now, to and about people over 40. Has that after 40 slump indigestion hit you? Do you have to be more careful about what you eat? Do you get tired and nervous sooner than you used to? Then try this tonic food before your meal. The Fleischmann's new high vitamin yeast being sold in this vicinity. This fresh, active yeast acts to strengthen the digestion, to help the glands in the stomach give out a more normal flow of digestive juices. Besides helping the digestion, this new high vitamin yeast is richer than ever in 4 vitamins everyone needs. And here's an important point. The yeast acts like a booster for these vitamins. By toning up the digestion, it aids the assimilation of these vitamins and other foods eaten. Eat 1 cake of Fleischmann's new high vitamin yeast a half hour before breakfast, another a half hour before supper. Just eat it plain or dissolved in a little water. Do this regularly and see if your digestion doesn't improve and if you don't feel more vigorous and energetic. Large and lively show, including among its headliners, Miss Ethel Merman of the cast of Alexander's Ragtime Band. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night. Included on this program, Swing is here from I'm Mary Denise. This is the National Broadcasting Company.